Alcoholic.
Hi, Shipley. We love you, Shipley. Lots and lots and lots. And
Wow. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Before I start, I first want to thank God for this day because without him, this would not be possible. And then I want to thank Robin for asking me. It's always an honor and a privilege to give back what was so kindly, freely given to me. My sobriety date is January 20th, 2002. And I say that because I came in here struggling and I did not believe that this was for me. My home group is Pass It On that meets on Mondays at 7 o'clock on the corner of Lyle and Austin. I have a sponsor. I have a lady that I work with. You know, I'm just so overwhelmed this morning. It's like I was telling John outside that when I was your age, I simply did not get this. I never thought that I was an alcoholic. I can be anything else but an alcoholic. You know, I don't get into a very big drunk along, but how much I drink the dry goods is also a part of my story. But I stay out of the dry goods because it always started with a drink and it always ended with a drink for this alcoholic. I will tell you a little bit about myself. Everybody in my family did drink, except for my grandmother. My grandmother was one of the ones that kept the family together, and no matter what was going on, we always got together as a family. I was an only child. My mother was a young mother. So basically, you know, everybody was my caretaker. I can't tell you if everybody in my family were alcoholics because I cannot diagnose them. But I will tell you is that after a while, when them jokers got together and they started drinking, after a while, you heard the arguing, you heard the fighting, you heard people getting put out and don't come back. And then the next thing you know, they back for Sunday dinner. You know, but I will tell you is that, you know, my grandfather had this really big house and, you know, we all got together as a family. And I remember on them Fridays and Saturday nights, you know, they played little card games and everything. And, you know, the kids would be downstairs. Because, see, when I was coming up, kids had to stay in the kids' place. You don't be in the grown-ups' place. You know, you don't say what's going on the inside of the house. You kept that on the inside of the house. You know, and I was one of them little girls that always went to church every Sunday. You know, and no matter what went on in the church, we had to go, especially the girls, not so much as the boys. You know, I was a brownie girl, a Girl Scout girl, you know, so I basically had a pretty decent childhood. But I will tell you is that, you know, you have little kids that might take a cookie out the cookie jar or, you know, a little quarter off the table for ice cream when they go to school or to treat their little friends a little penny candy. Back in them days, they was 1 cent. You know, I think they now 4 cents or 5 cents now. You know, and first thing I took was a can of beer. See, at my early age, you know, I was a troubled child. I basically stayed to myself. I didn't really talk much. I didn't really get involved much. My grandmother didn't allow me to sleep over or have sleepovers, you know. So basically, I was always around adults. And I would get into a little corner and I would play with my Barbie doll because I had nobody to talk to. And even though things were going on in my family and I seen a lot of different things going on, I always told myself, I'm never going to be like that when I grow up. I'm never going to do this when I grow up. I'm not going to church anymore. They make me go to church. You know, so as I was coming up, I was always, you know, had this some type of understanding that there was some type of God. I might not have personally knew him, but I knew that there was something that was installed in me to believe in something greater than myself. You know, and I remember, you know, going upstairs and they dared me to go upstairs and get them something to drink. And that was the first time I stole, and I stole beer. And I went upstairs and I got them beers and I came downstairs and I passed them beers out to everybody. And I guess you know we had our own party going on. But everybody passed out except for me. And at that particular time in my life, when I took that first drink, something happened to me. My whole attitude about life, life situations, my behaviors, the things that I thought that was going on inside my head, all started to change when I took that first drink. And I remember everybody passing out. And see, and I was one of them little girls that told on everybody, you know, because I wasn't going to get a spanking. You know, so if something happened, you know, and they said, who did it, Shibley? I'd be like, her, you know, or this one, or, you know, and I start telling on everybody, you know, because I didn't want to get a spanking, you know. So I would tell on everybody, and, you know, it basically was like that. You know, I got out of a lot of things. I told on everybody. I lied about a lot of things, you know, because I learned how to lie and cover up at an early age. And I remember, I was an all right student in school, though. And see, and I remember when I was coming up, when the streetlights came on, we had to be on the other side of the door. But every Sunday, we got together as a family. But when I took that first drink, my life had changed. It was like a different side of the world for a little girl like me. I started hanging out with pimps, liars, thieves, manipulators, con artists, women of ill repute, whores, however you want to put them, you know. And everything that I had surrounded myself with, I had became myself, but I wasn't a good thief. Because when I stole things, I always was the one that got caught. So everything that I did, I put my best at it. I became a good liar. I became a good cheat. I became a good manipulator. I became a good con. And that's basically how I went from there. I remember hanging out on the school bench because I dropped out at the 11th grade because you know what? It was no longer for a girl like me. See, the streetlights had came so exciting for a girl like me that I didn't believe that I belonged on the other side anymore. I found a new way of living, as it would say. And that new way of living, I remember just hiding myself and getting involved with these people and dropping out of school and thinking like, you know what, this is it right here, girl. You have found your destination. I have finally arrived. I have finally belonged in the spotlight. Because, see, I was a person that was, I can get along with anybody. I was a people person. You know, I hang out with the smart ones, the not so smart ones, the punk rockers, the ones I didn't understand, that didn't talk too good of English. You know, it didn't matter. They laughed. Hell, I laughed. It, whatever they were saying was funny. I don't know if they was talking about me or not, but it was funny. And basically, that's what I did. I went through people's lives thinking that it was okay when I started drinking and doing the other things, mixing things in a life that I never thought that I was going to be able to live. So as you know, with dropping out of school and drinking and going to keg parties and, you know, closing the bars down and doing all the things that, you know, what this alcoholic does when I get drunk, it was okay for me. I remember, you know, being on a bullpen floor, not even understanding or realizing why I got there. I remember going into my dirty clothes to see which one smells the best. Yes, I did it. You know, see which one smells the best so I could start my day off, because you know I just had to get one more. I remember singing that I'm going to show up and I would never make it there. Because I had to get one more. I remember telling people that I was going to do something and I couldn't do it because I had to put one more into my body. I remember there was times that I would literally shake because I had to put something into my body. Whereas though I didn't understand why I drink the way that I drink until I got in the textbook of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it said that men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. Anything to get Chablis out of herself. Anything to make Chablis feel different. Anything to make me talk different. Anything to make me walk different or make you look at me different. I consumed it into my body because I didn't like the skin that I was in. So I drank for the effect. And after a while, I no longer even knew what I was doing anymore. I tramped through people's lives, ran through people's lives like a hurricane, and that was okay with me. As long as you had what I wanted, believe me, I was going to get it. I was going to talk my way so smooth that you were going to give it to me. I remember going, there was times that I would go into my cabinet and there was nothing in there but oodles of noodles. Or open up my refrigerator and there was nothing in there but a jug of water. But I was okay like that. Detox, in and out of detox, in and out of detox. I went to detox so much they knew when I was coming. They knew my first name, my last name, my date of birth. I didn't have to give them no information because they knew exactly who I was. She's coming today. I remember one time they told me, oh, we had a bet that you were coming in because I simply could not get it. I was that alcoholic that loved to drink. The textbook talks about three types of drinkers, the moderate drinker, the hard drinker, and the real alcoholic. That real alcoholic had described me because once I put that drink into my body, I knew what I was going to do, how I was going to do it, how I was going to react, and how I was going to respond to you. So I will cover it up. So you could look on the outside of me and think that everything was okay, but on the inside of me, I was dying and I was hurting and I was sick and I was so full of pain and shame and guilt that the only thing that I can do is just drink even more. See, it didn't even stop there because, see, I went to the drug court system. I went through the jail system. You know, they even sent me all the way down to Albany. It didn't even matter because I just simply could not stop drinking. And I'm going to be perfectly honest with you. I didn't want to stop drinking because I did not think that I still had a problem. I thought that it was okay for me to fit in. I get in where I fit in. And see, I fit it in there. And I would go through life and I just think that it's okay. I hurt people. I lied to people. But it was okay. And I remember just asking myself, saying, you know, getting on my knees. Because I remember as a little girl, we always had to pray. And I remember getting on my knees and saying, oh, God, if you could just please help me. You know, just do this. Fix this charge for me. Or, you know, that 411 God or 511 God, whatever you want to call him. See, I had a God of my own understanding. So I knew that if I continued to pray to him, something was going to happen. So, you know, as you know, I started praying and something did happen. But it didn't stop there. Because once everything, he took care of my little problems or my little situations, I was back to doing the same old things. Hurting the same people. Most of all, hurting myself. And you know what? I remember realizing that this thing does not discriminate. It doesn't matter if you're purple, black, Hispanic, Chinese, Puerto Rican, African-American, it wants me dead. But it just settled for me just drunk and acting a fool. It'll just settle for me going through rampaging through people's lives. It'll just settle for me just keep hurting myself. And I remember being so sick of this, you know, that I remember literally standing on the edge of a bridge wanting to jump, but too of a coward to actually go over. I remember times I would be in a dark room because I would be so much in a dark place wanting to pull the trigger to my head and just pull the trigger. Because nobody understood what I was going through. Nobody understood my pain. Nobody knew how I was suffering. I didn't have anybody that I felt that I could talk to because you know what? Only thing that I can remember is growing up and you don't talk about what's going on. You take it to God. That's all I can remember. being in that dark place, and the only thing that I knew how to do is just say, whatever it is that you need to do, I just need you to do it. Whatever it is that I'm praying to, I just need you to fix it. But I knew better to know that there was something and somebody, some spirituality that was bigger than me. And I remember going through the drug court system, and, you know, I go in there, and, you know, they take your urine test, and, you know, they ask you, you go in front of a judge, and they be like, have you used? Oh, no, not me. You know, courtroom full of people, all bunch of drunks and addicts like me, you know. We all in there for the same old thing. Oh, no, not me. Take my urine, and 7 days, you lied. Then I go in for 7 days, I get back out, and I'll do it all over again. I go back in front of the judge and say, oh, did you use? Oh, no, not me. Take my urine, 7 days again. Got so tired of me, he was like, she just is not going to work out. Just let her just finish it up. Nothing mattered. Nothing mattered. For some reason, I didn't understand why I couldn't give up drinking. I knew that there was a part of me that knew that there was something else that needed to be done in my life, that I had to change some things. There were some things that I wanted to change. There were some things I didn't want to change. And there were some things that I was straight comfortable with. And I felt that my life was going to be completely over, and I wasn't going to be able to laugh. I wasn't going to be able to have no fun. I wasn't going to be able to bowl. I wasn't going to be able to chew no gum right if I didn't put a drink into my body. Yeah, chew gum right. But I remember something just happened. When I remember, you know, I have called on God so many times, and, you know, I had done took my will back and I gave it back to him, and I took it back and I gave it back to him, and I got this all under control. I can do this on my own. I don't need you, and I don't need you, and I don't need you. You know, I'm basically capable of, you know, I can comprehend a little bit, you know, but at the time in my life when I realized that I was dying, I knew that I had to change. I knew that I had to put the drink down. I knew that this thing was bigger than me. And I knew that if I didn't stop drinking, I was going to die. I had two choices, either live or die. And then that's when I got so, you know, I didn't start getting sick and tired of being sick and tired. I actually got uncomfortable in my own skin. I actually got to the point where I couldn't even look in the mirror to comb my hair. I actually got to the point where I would literally just be in a dark room, you know, with the blinds closed, and don't want to see no sunlight, don't want to see anything, don't want to see anybody, don't want to talk to anybody, pick up my phone, look at it, and shoot it, because everybody just all over me. You know, wearing 3 and 4 pairs of pants, you know, going around the family, letting them think that I got this all under control, but scared to tell somebody that I ain't got this under control and that I need help. That if you don't help me, I don't know what I'm going to do, or I don't know what's going to happen to me. Only thing that I realized is that I wanted to be free. Only thing that I realized is that I wanted to change. And at that point in my life, things started to get a little clearer. And I started going to meetings after a detox, of course, in a outpatient program. You know, and I went to High Nooners, was my first home group, and I was sitting in the back of High Nooners and with my head hung down because I was so ashamed, you know, of who I was, but I didn't care who seen me when I was out there. See, I had some trust issues with you people when I came in here. But see, when I was out there at 4 and 5 o'clock in the morning just trying to get me one more, I didn't have no trust issues. You know, I could just stick my stuff through the hole and, you know, go to the bootlegger and walk down the street in a blizzard, you know, could be a thunderstorm. I wouldn't even care. You know, probably somebody else's shoes on. on, it didn't even matter. Somebody else's coat probably all the way up to my elbow because it don't belong to me. It didn't even matter as long as I simply just got one more. I didn't care. But when it came to the point where I had to come in these rooms and ask somebody for help, I had a problem with you. I ain't telling them people my business. This thing doesn't even work. I thought it was a cult. Because the only thing I seen when the first meeting I went to was a bunch of old people. And I just simply did not belong. And I still didn't realize and want to admit that I was an alcoholic. I didn't get that part. I didn't want to get that part. Because I believe that an alcoholic was a person that laid on a park bench with a trench coat, with a bottle in his back pocket that asked me for some change. You know, and I remember my sponsor said, Shabli, have you ever been homeless? And I was like, oh, no, I've never been homeless. I always had somewhere to go. She was like, no, I don't think you get it. Have you ever been homeless? And I was like, oh, no, I've never been homeless. I've always had a place to go. She said, no. Have you ever slept on anybody else's couch that wasn't yours? I said, yeah. She said, well, did you get any mail at that address? I said, no. She said, but then you were homeless. So, as you know, I got my first resentment with her. And I remember, you know, just going through the meetings and sitting in the meetings.
Full of clouds and everything, and I really didn't still think I belonged there. And, you know, I would sit there, and the only thing that I kept hearing out of all the readings was rarely have I seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path.
I didn't hear anything else, but I heard rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. And that particular time, you know, I don't really get into, oh, I did this and, you know, oh, I did that. You know, I'm pretty sure we're all sitting in this room know what a drunk does. You know, chaos, love the chaos, act a fool. I get crazy. You know, I want to fight. I want to close down the bar. I want to stand on top of the table and shake my rump, you know, and close the party down. And, you know, and if I'm not there, then it's not happening. It's not real. You know, and it is basically just simply that. You know, then I want to tell you what to do and tell you how to do it. Sometimes I still get like that too, you know. But then I want to just, you know, if you just do it my way and how it works, and, you know, if you just do it how I want it to be done, all will be well. You know, I'm like that actor that wants to run the whole show. You know, if you just don't sit properly, you don't belong here. If you don't just fold your arms properly, you don't belong here. See, I wanted Alcoholics Anonymous to teach me how to drink like a normal alcoholic. See, I wanted to have my little wine glasses in my hand with my pinky finger sticking out, you know, and sip it, you know, and say, yeah, see, I have a ride because now I got this thing under control. But it did not stop there because I never had no control. I was powerless from the first time I put the drink into my body. My life had begun, and it never began. It was over. Because I had no idea what I was getting into. I had no idea on where it was going to take me. I had no idea on how the people it was going to affect. I had no idea on the things that it was going to do to a person like me. See, I forgot about being a brownie girl. I forgot about being a Girl Scout. I forgot about being a good little girl sitting over in a corner, you know, playing with a little ugly Barbie doll. You know, yeah, I had Ken and Barbie. You know, they had little McDonald's times back at that time. You know, had a little kid. They tried to keep me busy so I stay out their way. And that's basically what I did, stayed out of their way. So when I started drinking and doing my own little thing, I stayed out of their way. I was used to it. So, you know, I'll get on and, you know, I'll go back a little bit. I remember when I thought that I was going to get sober, and I said, oh, okay, yeah. Oh, this might work for me. And I'll get my little 30-day coin. And I'm all excited, yeah, uh-huh, because then when I was in rehab, the counselor said, out of all you people in this room, only two or three of y'all gonna make it. And I said, I know I am.
You know, I got my little 24-hour coin, you know, and I'm just, you know, eagles just shooting all up high. You know, I got myself on a little pedestal because, you know, I can comprehend a little bit. I'm a little smart here. You know, I know what it says in the big book, you know, and absolutely I didn't even know nothing. I didn't even know how to digest this. Then I went to High Noons. I got my little 30-day coin. I said, yeah, I told her I was going to make it, you know. And, you know, I'm hanging around my little rehab buddies and, you know, the blind leading the blind. And I'm in rehab, you know, telling everybody what to do and how to do it. You know what I'm saying? And if you just do it this way, you know, we're all going to make it, you know. And I only got 2 days. But, you know, this okay with my 2 days. You know, I'm pretty smart here. You know, just sit over there, you know, and just keep on your head and just agree with everything and you'll just get on right on out of here. Then I got my 60-day coin, and in 62 days I was drunk all over again. Then it didn't matter, you know, because I missed something. So, you know, I got to go back. In my mind, I'm saying, oh, well, they didn't tell me how to do this part, you know, so I have to wind up back in rehab. Then I'll get back out again. I'll get me another 30-day coin. And I say, oh, I got to do this a little bit different this time. You know, and then the next thing you know, I get my 60-day coin again. And in 62 days, I was drunk all over again. And see, and that just kept going on and kept going on and kept going on for, I'll say, probably about 7 months. Probably a little longer. I'm not quite sure. But I do remember I couldn't get it right. I do remember that I couldn't stop. So after my 60-day coin, you know, I said, well, I'll do it for my grandmother. I'm going to do it this time. I'm really sorry, you know, telling my family, oh, I'm really sorry that I did this. And, you know, I'm really sorry that I hurt you. And, you know, and I won't do it no more. You know, can I just come home? Or, you know, can you just do this for me? Or, you know, please forgive me. Oh, God, please forgive me. You know, I never meant to do these things. And, you know, and then the next thing you know, they done forgave me. And then I'm back in their purse. Or I'm back doing something that I shouldn't be doing. And I was okay with that too, so it didn't matter. I don't want to die today. No matter what goes on in my life, God, please allow me to die sober. No matter what I go through or how I feel, no matter what personal things that I may be feeling, let me have enough of this to where so I can go through it safely, because I am an alcoholic of the hopeless type. But regardless of whatever it is that I go through, I do not drink. And I remember coming in here and wanting to get sober. And I remember at that particular time, I say, whatever you need to do for me, I just simply need you to do it. Because I have not had this under control for a very long time. I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know where I'm going. I don't know what I'm looking for. Only thing I know is that I just don't want to die. And I started to be open-minded. And I started to have the willingness and desire to change everything about Chablis. I started being teachable to where as though I was able to receive what somebody else had to give me. I started to actually sit there and listen and pay attention, because I remember getting with my sponsor and she was like, I had probably 9 months in the program and I had like 8 sponsors. Because I still got that same street mentality. I'm really not ready, but I just need you to just tell me how I can do this a little bit differently. You know, so you could pick me up for a meeting. You could take me out for coffee. You could just simply just do what I'm asking you to do. You know, we all just going to get along, you know. But I remember sitting around and I had like them, all them sponsors. And I remember being at a meeting in Renaissance on a Friday night. And I heard this one particular lady speaking. And I edged my husband and I said, I think I'm going to ask her to sponsor me. And he said, oh boy, you're about to get busy. I was like, no. But I asked her. And I got busy. And when I say I got busy, I got busy. And I remember the first time I got with her, and she said, okay, Shibli, you know, she sat across from my table, and she said she bought my first big book, you know, and she took me to my first convention, you know, and I was all excited, you know, because I was actually at that point in my life where I really wanted to live and not die. I really wanted to take somebody else's suggestions. I realized in the book it said that there was a solution to all my problems and all my needs, you know, and the only thing I had to do was just sit quietly and listen, and I was going to hear my story, my message through somebody else, and God was going to work through somebody else to reach me, because at that particular time, nothing could reach me, because I still had desire to not want to change everything about myself. So she gave me this book and she said, all right, Shibli, you know, open up your big book, you know, and I opened up my big book and, you know, of course you don't see nothing. And she said, now what does it say? I opened it up. I said, it says Alcoholics Anonymous. And she said, no, Shibli, close your book. So I closed the book and, you know, and she said, open up again, Shibli. And I was like, I'd open up again. And she said, now what does it say? I said, Alcoholics Anonymous. And she said, no, Shibli, close your book. Now, see, I'm still, now that's my second resentment at her, you know, because now she's really making me mad, you know, because I know I can read Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. So she's like, no, Shibli, close your book. Now, open up your book again. She said, no, what does it say? I said, it says Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I'm really mad now because she don't know me, you know, and I don't know her. But now she's getting to the point she's working my nerves. Now, I don't really want to deal with you, you know, because, see, you're not doing it the way I want you to do it. So now you're really just really ticking me off. So I'm mad. So she said, oh, sweetie, you mad? And I said, yeah. She said, don't be mad. Get a piece of paper, get a pen out. I'm going to teach you how to do a 10-step. And I said, oh, ain't we going to the book? No, we're going to skip the book for now. You need to write out this right now because you're feeling a little something. And that's just how she was talking to me. And I was like, okay. And then I realized what a 10th step was. And I didn't want to do it anymore. But I sat there and I did that 10th step and it had me to look at the situation. It had me to look at my resentments, my selfishness, my dishonesty, and my fears. So then after I did that 10th step, we got back to the book. And she said, okay, now, Shibli, now that you did that and we done talked about it and we done prayed about it and everything, now open up your book again. And then I realized that she was talking about this page that has nothing on it. And she said, now what's on that page? I said, nothing. She said, and that's what you know, absolutely nothing. So you sit there and you listen to what other people has to say and let somebody give you some type of knowledge and understanding about what it is to be an alcoholic. And when you start listening and realizing what it is that and why you're an alcoholic, then you will understand why we do what we do and why people continue to stay. Why people's lives change. Why people's attitudes change. Why people's behaviors change. Why people dress differently than what they used to dress like when they came in here. Why my language has cleared up since I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. My life might not be perfect, but I practice the principles in all my affairs on a day-to-day basis. And no matter what I go through in life, I carry the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous with me. And no matter what's going on in my personal life right now, I bet you one thing, you don't never see me with a drink in my hand or feeling sorry for myself. I said it ain't nothing but God's will. So I went through the big book. And I learned about what it is to be an alcoholic. I learned more about myself in the textbook of Alcoholics Anonymous. And then I started realizing and getting to know who put this thing together. Why they put it together. And then me and my sponsor sat there and we looked at a movie. The Bill W. movie. And then I was like, oh my gosh. He just not gonna get this. She said, Shabli, just be quiet and just listen and just keep on looking at the movie. I said, he's having a hard time here. He's just not gonna get this. What's the purpose of us sitting here watching him drink? Hell, we ain't drinking. So we sat there and we watched it, and poor Lois, she just went through all types of little stuff, you know. And that just reminded me of my husband when I couldn't get sober. He was babysitting me, and, you know, I just couldn't get it either. But he was like a Lois, and I was like a Bill to him, you know. But then I got it. And in the morning time, I get up and I say, God, I offer myself to thee, to build with me and to do with me as thy will. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those that I will help. Of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life, may I simply do your will always. This is not about me. This is about us. Whatever is blocking me from the sunlight of the Spirit, I need you to remove it. Take everything that's not like you. I need you to take it out of me. It might not be when I want it. It might not be when I need you to take it. But I know eventually you're going to do what you need to do in my life. Because I am a living vessel for you. And I am a mouthpiece. And without you, I can't do nothing. So I need you to continue to guide me through this walk, this journey, this traveling, whatever it is that I'm doing. Please just walk with me. I'm like the footsteps in the sand. I can't never do this alone because we had to do this together. And when I realized that this was a we program, sometimes I got a little sober. I said, hell, they don't want to stay sober. Why I got to keep working with somebody that don't want to stay sober? My sponsor said, Shabli, you need to get out of yourself. Because wasn't somebody there for you when you got here? And did it make me realize, yeah, you're right. I really, really understood what it meant with helping others. I understand what it means to be there for another sick and suffering alcoholic. It says that my primary purpose was to stay sober and help another alcoholic to achieve sobriety. I can't tell you how to fix a washing machine. That's not why I'm here. I can't tell you how to put all the children together in a car load when they're acting like a bunch of little clowns because they're looking at scary movies. That's not why I'm here. I can't tell you about the judge system or the court system or whatever or how to fix a bite because that's not why I'm here. That's my personal time with you. But I will tell you on how I do it on a day-to-day basis to make it my business to take it one day at a time and stay sober one day at a time. That's why I'm here. That's why I continue to do what it is that I need to do. To where as though I can help another alcoholic. And it doesn't even have to be an alcoholic. It could be an old woman in the store that reminds me of my grandmother. Do I walk past her and I see her struggling trying to get something off the shelf? Or do I help her? I learned how to help others. I learned how to be there for other people. I learned how to grow up and show up and put my big girl panties on. And if I say I'm going to be there, I'm going to be there. If I say I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it. My word is my word, and that's simply all that I have. And that's what I stick by, and that's what I live by. No matter what goes on, no matter what I'm feeling, I do what I say I'm going to do, and I show up, and I grow up. I no longer want to be the pity. I no longer want to sit back and have the shame all over my face, feeling sorry for myself and you feeling sorry for me. I don't want to be that person. I want to be that person where as though when I'm going through something, I need to talk to somebody and say, can you please walk with me? Can you please just listen to what I got to say? Because I have some things on my mind. And if I don't get them out to another person that's understanding like I am, that's an alcoholic. See, I can go to church to save my life. Oh, yeah. You know, because the priest's going to tell me to pray about it. But see, it's something about the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. When I get into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, that's my stomping ground. That's my medicine. That's where I get to grow up and be my own self and say, you know what? Everybody's going to understand what it is that I'm going through because they're just like me. It's not nothing that I can't say to an alcoholic that they wouldn't be able to help me walk through. It's not nothing that I can't say to an alcoholic that's going to surprise them. It's not nothing that I can say to an alcoholic that they never heard or ever see or never went through themselves. So I love Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was glad that there was two people that got together to create something so unique as this right here for an old drunk like me. Because if it wasn't for them and a God that worked through their life, I don't even know where I'd be right now. I know where I'd be, but I don't want to think about it. So what I do is I take one day at a time. I came in here and I got a sponsor. I came in here and I started to listen. I came in here and I started to be friends and have friends and have a family beyond what I ever thought could be a family. I learned how to love people because I didn't know how to love myself. I learned how to respect other people because I didn't know how to respect myself. I learned how to be concerned for another human being because I never was concerned about myself. I learned how to grow up and be a woman of maximum service for God. I learned how to grow up and be a daughter. I learned how to grow up and be a wife. I learned how to grow up and be a friend. And I learned how to grow up and be honest about what it is that I'm feeling or what I'm going through. This is my life. And see, I can come in here and be old good AA for one good hour, you know, and then on the next 23 hours of the day, you know, I'm in line at the grocery store, you know, cussing out the lady because she's moving too slow, you know, or I'm somebody seeing me. You never know who's from Alcoholics Anonymous that sees you. You never know who's looking at what or who's seeing what. You know, see, I tell people I ain't got nothing to hide. I am who I am. But I carry Alcoholics Anonymous every day. And no matter what I go through in life, I learned that there's a step to walk me through. I learned that whatever it is that I'm feeling in life or I'm going through, there's a step to carry me through. I'm just so excited, you know, for, I was telling someone, I couldn't get this at 17 and 16. I know somebody that got it at 14.
I was my head
trying to chase another one. I'm so excited for you, and my heart is overwhelmed with love for you guys. Because this is now the last house on the block. And see, and one thing that I learned about Alcoholics Anonymous, this party keeps going. And it keeps going. And it keeps going, and it never stops. They got meetings 24 around the clock. And I learned how to say, you know what? Thank you. I learned how to be pleasant. And I remember I went to a meeting, and I said, hi, how are you? And a girl, she looked at me like I had nine heads, you know. I know I got a big head, but, you know, she looked at me like I had nine heads. But you know what? I learned how to do that because you never know. That greet or that smile, that person may have needed it. And after the meeting, she came up to me, because of course, me, being who I am, I mentioned it in the meeting. Oh, yeah, I spoke to somebody, and you know, they looked at me like I had 9 heads. You know, and I'm just friendly. She was like, that person was me, but thank you, because you made me feel so much better. I said, let me give you a hug. My life today is totally different than what it was 13 and a half years ago. My life, my feelings, my behaviors, my personality, the way I talk, is totally different. And I thank God for that. And I'm not saying that, you know, oh, my life is like peaches and cream, you know, the oatmeal. I love peaches and cream oatmeal, you know. I'm not saying it's like peaches and cream oatmeal, you know. But I will tell you is that I've learned how to strive every day of my life to make it better. I've learned how to do it differently. I've learned how to just say hi, thank you, have a good day. Or are you going through something? Are you okay? Don't need to know. But it's just that thought that comes out to make another person know that, you know what, I am concerned. And I love the slogan, I am responsible. Because when anywhere, when anyone anywhere reaches out for help, I want the hand of AA to always be there. And for that, I, Shibley, am responsible. I need to continue to do what I need to do to where so I can help another alcoholic or I can help another human being. Allow me just to be teachable. Allow me to just be able to just say, you know what? It's going to be an okay day. It's going to be a sunny day because I opened up my eyes and I remember what I did last night. And I wasn't with nobody else's husband. I wasn't with nobody else's man. You know, I wasn't sleeping next to nobody I shouldn't have been sleeping next to. You know, I don't have to go through my dirty clothes. I can pay a bill on time. You know, I can just do what it is that I need to do. And I am responsible. I can get up and go to, well, I can't say get up and go to work because I ain't got no job. But I used to get up and go to work. And I'm gonna tell you something, and I'm gonna just end it like that. I went through like a really dark position, and I got hurt really bad on my job. And I've been out of work since July of last year. And I told myself, and I said, well, you know what? I can't do this. It's driving me crazy. You know, I'm like a walking pharmacy. I don't let them give me any narcotics. You know, thank God. That's probably why I'm still pained up, but it's okay too. You know, because some things you just simply can't give a drug addict and an alcoholic. You know, and for me, you ain't just going to give me anything, you know, because I start wondering, you know, like, oh, how that's going to make me feel. You know, it might take, if it, ibuprofen and Excedrin can't do it, then you know what? I don't want it. How about that one? Because I'm a straight up junkie. I'm a straight up alcoholic. And I cannot mix things and put things into my body that's going to cause me damage or harm or take me back to a place that I don't want to go back to. So what I do is I speak up to my doctor. Oh, don't give me that. No, don't give me that. You know, so what I did was when I got hurt at my job and, you know, I said, you know, I was telling my attorney, I said, oh, I'm just, you know, they got me, I'm depressed. That's what they said, I am depressed. You know, I think I'm depressed too, you know, but if somebody's sitting in a dark room, you know, and with no lights on and they just staring at the wall, hell, I think you're depressed or something going on in your head that you might need to talk about, you know. So I sit in there and I'm just thinking, I'm talking to the little psychiatrist and I'm like, she said, well, do you ever feel like killing yourself? I said, oh, no, I don't feel like killing myself. And I tell you another thing, too. I don't feel like drinking either, no matter what I'm going through. I'm going to put that out there so you will know that. So what they did is they, before I even got that even out, they sent me to, maybe you might need to just go to, I told my friend Brian, you know, they got me going. Told me I had to go to a KSAC program. I say, isn't that for active users and everything? And he was like, yeah. I said, what I look like with over 13 years of sobriety going in there with a slip talking about I need you to sign my slip because y'all want me to keep active? I don't think so. So I had to pray on it. I didn't even have to pray too long because I said, you know what? I went and I talked to the lady and I said, you know what? She was like, well, in our system, it shows that you... It's been quite some time. I say, yeah, it's been a long time, and I don't appreciate them embarrassing me to send me here to talk to you. I don't need to talk to you. I go to Alcoholics Anonymous every day. I see alcoholic people every day. I don't need to talk to you. I don't need no help from the... I got room for helping everything from the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. So she said, well, you're not going to have to do another interim or whatever, you know. So I said, okay, thank you. So to make a long story short, you know, I was out of work and I kept saying, you know, I need to do something with my time. You know, I need to, you know, start doing some other things and, you know, just to occupy my time. Because I get a little depressed sometimes. I ain't going to front. You know, I'm human. I bleed red blood too. You know, you can pinch me and it hurts, you know. And after a certain while, when I do so many things, my arm and my hand swells up, you know, it's so many things that I can do, you know, because it's limited because I have a real bad nerve on my right side, you know. So I try to just relax. So out of all the things why I'm telling you that is because I miss my job. I'm so used to being active. I'm so used to being of service to someone else. Because see, that's what I did for a living. My job was to take care of someone. And the person had cerebral palsy. And so you knew I had to feed them, bathe them, clothe them, and everything else. And I really miss my job. So I said, okay, my husband told me, he said, well, maybe it's time for you to just get more active into Alcoholics Anonymous. Because you've been working 75, 80 hours a week, you know, don't have enough hours in one day to do anything. So I said, okay, you know, so that's basically what I've been doing. Trying to do what I need to do to be of service for others and leaving myself out of it. You know, and sometimes people don't understand, you know, that's why we're here, to help others. That's why we're here to help walk with others through whatever it is they need to go through. And like I said, you know, I have little other things that's going on, and I get all teary-eyed about Alcoholics Anonymous because it saved my life. It gave me a life beyond my wildest dreams, and I thought that my life was going to be over. But little did I know my life had just begun. And I am so excited to be here. And I am so excited to share this opportunity, and thank you. Thank you. I left a lot of things out. Sometimes I don't know what the heck I'm going to say when I get up here. You know, sometimes I could be a clown when I'm up here. You know, sometimes I could, you know, I never know. I never know what I'm going to say. You know, but one thing that I will tell you is that there's hope in these rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, that there's a life in these rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and there's a gift because we are the only selfish, self-centered people that have a second chance at life. The only ones. We're the only ones. Because we lived getting high and drunk, and now we have another chance at living and staying sober. And it's an honor and a privilege. Thank you.